This podcast is sponsored by Release Winery. Every wine tells a story. Each growing season, it's our goal to create an artisan Napa Valley wine of exceptional quality. Join us as the story of this ultra-limited wine continues. Learn more at releasewinery.com.
If you enjoy this podcast, please like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram. And visit our website at lifebetweenthevines.com.
Wine's been in my blood a long time. My parents actually started me early, and I think today, if I were to say this and I was young, they might actually be accused of child abuse of some sort. But
it's so funny because my vineyard manager over in Sonoma once told me that if I ran into a bear, I had to throw my arms in the air, and if I ran into a cougar, then I had to roll and play dead. And then I thought, well, isn't it supposed to be the other way? And he said, oh, yes. I said, well, you try to kill me?
Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 467. This week we feature Ken Nerlove and Elise Nerlove, owners of Elkhorn Peak Cellars in Napa Valley. Several years ago, I met with Ken Nerlove, owner of Elkhorn Peak Cellars, at a tasting in Napa Valley. His Pinot Noir, along with his humor, found a place in my memory. Last year, I recorded his daughter Elise as part of the Save the Family Farms podcast. That would be number 374. For this podcast, I met with both of them on my first trip back to Napa in over 20 months. There's nothing like smiling faces and drinking wine in person with wine growers. Nothing. You can hear Ken on our Vino Lingo segment, defining the phrase, it is what it is. 20 months have gone by since I've been back to Napa Valley, and I'm here today, first interview of this particular trip, I am here with Elise Nerlove and with her dad, Ken Nerlove, at Elkhorn Peak Cellars. How you guys doing?
Fantastic, Ray. Thanks for asking.
Great to have you out here, Ray.
Thank you for having me out here. This is a cool place. You have a neat, I'm going to call it a playroom.
There you go.
In the back, people can see that there's some incredibly vintage slot machines. And I mean, how old are those, Ken?
These are as old as me, 1948, and that is old.
So they've been around for a little while.
They have, as I have been.
And there are a few downstairs as well.
A few.
Are they all functional?
They all work. Oh, that's my thing is fixing old slot machines and everything.
That's nice.
Keeping them going. What I'm trying to do with myself. Yeah. Keep myself going.
I'm trying to do that. I'm really glad I got here before it got dark out because, of course, it's always interesting finding your way around some of the roads back here. But I always say this to so many places, but you guys really do win for the view. The view from this room is extraordinary. I believe we're looking at majority of the valley and some of San Pablo Bay, too?
San Pablo Bay area, yeah. It's a very pretty view.
It's nice. Mm-hmm. When did you start this, Ken?
We bought this ranch in 1983, so we've been here for almost 40 years, and we've developed the property over the years and really settled in and kind of custom tailored to our wants and everything, but never get tired of it. It's a very special place.
We post a lot of sunset pictures on our Instagram and Facebook because Dad calls them Arizona sunsets. Yeah. Out west, they're just really majestic, always pink and orange, just really beautiful.
It's high, too. How high are we here?
We're not even that high. We're at 400 feet elevation here. Wow. Yeah. But we are just east of Carneros, which is at sea level, and in some parts actually below sea level. So maybe that makes us feel a little bit higher.
That could be.
So our view here is we look over the whole Carneros region over to the San Pablo Bay. So it's very interesting area. It's an interesting area to grow grapes from a microclimate standpoint. But besides that, the views up here for what we do are pretty spectacular.
Yeah.
We like it.
Yeah. This area, what made you decide this is where you'd like to grow grapes?
That didn't enter into the decision. What happened, the history of Elkhorn Peak Cellars is that We bought this ranch in 1983, and at that time it was a foreclosed, deserted sheep farm. It used to be 900 acres. It's now currently 28 acres. Me and my partner bought this ranch in 1983, and our goal at that time was to come up here, fix it up, flip it, make some money. And at that time, there were no vineyards in South Napa. There were no vineyards in South Napa at all. It was considered secondary land. So we moved out here. I was single at the time. I had a little house. I moved up here, and I was fixing the water and all that kind of stuff. And I called my partner Greg and I said, "Hey, Greg, this is a pretty nice area. Why don't you guys think about moving here?" He was married, had a kid, and all that. So there was two houses. So he moved out here. And my partner, Greg, which is still living in the other home over there, he's a big idea guy. So he goes, "Well, geez, we're in the Napa Valley. Let's grow grapes." And I said, "Greg, I don't even know what a grapevine is." I said, "No, I'm not interested. I was commuting an hour each way to go to work." And I said, "No, I'm not interested." He was insistent that we grow grapes. So finally, relentlessly, you know, he was insistent about it. We put 2 acres of grapes in 1983. And again, this was prior to internet. To understand what you needed to do, you couldn't research. So I went around, talked to neighbors and guys in Carneros and all that stuff. And we put 2 acres of grapes in 1983. And at that time, there were no vineyards in South Napa. This was not a recognized grape growing region. So to fast forward, make a real long story short, we planted the grapes in 1983. I got really involved in it. Greg passively was kind of doing his thing. And then I got more interested in grape growing. We planted more acreage. I bought more land, da-da-da. And 40 years later, I'm a grape grower. So that's how I got involved in it. But everybody says, "Oh, you know, this was your life dream and all that." No, it wasn't. It wasn't what I decided to do. It's just where I ended up. But it ended up being a good choice.
He also tells that, you know, this was a ranch, always a ranch.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to do livestock. But when he started to think about what to plant out here, grapes didn't first come to mind because there were no grapes out here at the time. It's heavily planted today, but wasn't anything back then. So he was thinking about different crops, and I think the quote I like most is he said, "Potatoes just weren't sexy."
No. That's true.
California potatoes just doesn't have a name to it.
No. But, you know, if you stop and think about it, growing wine grapes is kind of a neat thing to grow because you make wine out of it and people enjoy wine. So if you can grow a crop that people enjoy, puts a smile on your face, it's not all bad.
No, not bad at all. No. When you started, were you selling most of your grapes or were you making wine or what were you doing?
We sold the grapes for probably about 10 years. And then as I got involved in this thing, I recognized there was no money in a small-scale farming. And I said, "This is ridiculous. I'm working real hard and growing all these grapes and not making any money." But that was 40 years ago, and your price per ton was not what it is nowadays, and it wasn't very much. So I said, "Well, I know what I'll do. I'll make wine. That'll put me on easy street, right?" Well, so we commercially started making wine in 1992. It was a good move. It kind of really elevated us from the farming aspect to the production aspect and all that. And that's how we got involved, Elkhorn Peak Cellars.
And our winemaker came to be. He was a student commuting to Davis, UC Davis, studying winemaking. And he drove past our vineyard and dropped a flyer in the mailbox and just said,
"Yep,
I'm a winemaking student going to UC Davis. If you want to make some wine out here, let me know." Dad called him. This guy is the master of deals out here. This guy is a master negotiator. So he somehow negotiated this deal where Kent would do all the work and then he would get half of the finished wine. So
that was Kent Rasmussen.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 1987. We negotiated a deal where he would make our wine. I gave him the grapes. He made the wine and we split it 50-50. And actually, I still have some of the 87 Pinot downstairs, but It, I think we should look at it instead of drinking it.
Yeah. It's my birth year wine.
Yeah, there you
go.
Nice.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. Wow. Wow.
But that's how we got involved in the winemaking thing with Kent Rasmussen.
Yep.
That was in 1987, and Kent still is our consulting winemaker. We did a custom crush with Kent over the years. He made our wine when he had his winery and all that kind of stuff. And Kent and I became very, very good friends. He's in my poker club. And he's a good poker player, too.
But it doesn't always make for good friends, though.
Yeah. That's
yeah. And Kent's been a fabulous mentor for me.
Yeah.
He knows our grapes and our site better than anyone. So as I'm taking over more winemaking tasks for the brand and starting to do some projects of my own, I call Kent for everything. He bought me my first winemaking book. So
what was that book? Do you remember?
Oh, God. I think it was called, like, Processing Grapes into Wine. I have so many books.
Oh, no. There's a sexy title, though. That's cool.
Very scientific, but yeah. Very informative. Really helped me understand what I was doing because I'm not classically trained UC Davis.
Well, what I told Elise is we do a custom crush. We make our wine down at Spelatich Cellars. Barbara Spelatich is the winemaker. Very cool lady, studied in France.
Also a fabulous mentor. Oh, my gosh.
A fabulous mentor.
Yeah.
And Kent's down there. So Elise is down there with these two really, really experienced winemakers. And when you're talking about making wine, education is good, but experience is better. And so she gets to draw to this hand, Barbara Spelatich, Kent Rasmussen, one-on-one mentorship. And just, it's like going to Davis with your own personal professor. She doesn't really realize how fortunate she really is.
Oh, I realize.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I got to say, my first vintage making sparkling wine, I was asking Kent Rasmussen a bunch of questions, and that guy was terrified that I was messing around with pressure and bottles. Terrified. He told me to destroy my first vintage, and I just couldn't do that, you know?
Yeah.
Couldn't waste a drop. But here I am. I have 4 sparkling wine vintages under my belt.
Okay.
And it's great. Now I'm totally in love with the sparkling wine making process.
Well, that's not surprising. Most people I know who get into it love it that way.
Yeah.
Let's talk about you for a moment. You've grown up with this. You've been influenced by this. You've got dirt under your fingernails. So now you're partners with your dad, right? Is that fair to say?
Yes, I'm very fortunate. My dad made me a 50% partner in the wine brand. So that was the greatest gift.
That's a very nice gift. But more importantly, if it's something that you love, that you're passionate about, why not, right? And isn't it cool to be able to hand that down to her and look back and say, yeah, I did this. This was good. I did 2 things good, her and the rest of this.
The where I come from, Ray, is this. Elise has the passion that I had 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. And if you re-interject passion into any endeavor, business, whatever, what can be better than that?
Totally agree.
That's so nice.
Yeah. So that's so it's self-serving too. She'll make me some money.
Well, there's that. I hadn't thought about that. How many cases are you guys making here?
We make just under 1,000 cases annually.
Nice. And are you distributed anywhere else, or is it strictly wine club, restaurants? How do people find
you? Every once in a while we get a restaurant placement, but we truly are the mom and pop business model. I work in the vineyard alongside my dad 8 months out of the year. I'm in the wine cellar. I'm the customer service person. He's the shipping guy. So we don't have the time for the boots on the ground to get the distribution that maybe other small producers have. So, we sell a case here and there to local restaurants, but we're, I think, 98% direct to the consumer.
That's great.
And most of that is through our wine club. Yes, we've been very fortunate.
And the only way the economics work for a small producer is direct to the consumer, period, the end, that's it. And that's where our focus is. And like Lee said, 80% of our wine sells to our wine club members, and our wine club members are very loyal followers. And without them, we wouldn't be in our position today. The average retention of our wine club members is over 10 years.
Wow.
Which is unheard of in the wine industry. But with that said, you have to understand is we've probably met if not 100%, close to 100% of our wine club members. So we consider it our family.
Yeah. And every decision we make, I mean, we do surveys out to our wine club members. What kind of wines do you want to see? What did you like? Do you have any ideas for us? And we really execute on that. So
that's amazing. That's really amazing. And I'm going to backpedal. First, when I met you originally, Ken, was, as we talked about outside a few minutes ago, probably at least give or take 10 years ago at an event. And I really liked your wines, but you were a lot of fun to talk to, which made you stick in my head for the longest time. And then
fantastic, fantastic.
Well, that's how it should be in the wine business.
It's how it should be in life.
Well, it should be. Yeah, I agree. And we all can't be as fantastic as the three of us are.
That's right.
We can just influence everybody else. And then years later, meeting Elise because of Rebecca Chandry, which is really just a wonderful interview that we did, Save the Family Farms, which was probably, what, two years ago. There you go. So my point to all this is it's nice to be remembered that way, because I think when people get to meet you and they see you're down-to-earth people, you're farmers, you're working your tails off to be able to operate this business. There's nothing easy about this business. While it's a lot of fun, it's a lot of work, like we talked about, Mother Nature, compliance, etc.
But if it's fun, it's not work.
Right.
And if you can have fun while you're at work, that's a pretty good deal.
And like my dad said, all of these wine club members are people we've met out in the world who want access to our wines, and this is the only way to have it. And so, you know, while I'm answering emails and stuff, you know, I know all these people. This isn't your typical customer service job. This is, you know, Melissa from Colorado, who I see all the time, and every time she comes to Napa, we have lunch. And
you got to wave to Melissa now.
Hey, Melissa.
She'll appreciate it.
Well, you know, Ray, I'll tell you what, it's also kind of selfish on our part, because in this business we're in, the wine business, when we get to sit down and meet new people and drink a glass of wine with them and talk to them, we get to meet people that our paths would never cross in a typical environment.
Yeah.
And we get to meet them over a glass of wine. And I personally get the opportunity to find out what's going on in their head. What do you do? Well, wow, tell me about that, da, 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 all that kind of stuff. And that's kind of a neat thing to do. So it's, I'm doing what I do and people want to know what I want to do and all that kind of stuff, but I'm getting something from this too.
There's no question. It's meeting people. It's like, you and I were talking before why I like interviewing winemakers. Right. We all enjoy meeting people.
That's
right. And when you're talking around wine, people start talking about all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns into a lot of fun. It's a wonderful thing. That's why wine is cool.
Yep.
Yeah. So this business of a winery, we were talking briefly again before about the concept of retirement. You don't strike me as the kind of guy that would really want to retire.
I'm retired now.
Right. There you go.
My life is retirement. I love what I do. And I'm still fortunate that I'm physically able to do what I like doing. So as long as I'm capable of doing it and I enjoy doing it, why would I want to stop?
That would be kind of silly.
What am I going to do, stop and watch TV? No, I'm not going to stop. I'm going to do what I like to do as long as I can do it. And I'll know when the day comes when I'm saying, Ken, you can't get on that tractor anymore. But that day's not here.
If there's a commonality with winemakers, it's the tractor. I hear that all the time. I have one guy I talked to who's 81 years old. He's like, when I can't get on my tractor anymore.
That's right.
At least you and I met when we talked again, as I mentioned, with Rebecca Chandry and Save the Family Farms. Again, it was 2 years ago. COVID has come in between and maybe stunted a little bit of your progress. Maybe it's helped you. How are things standing with that today?
We are still working on establishing a micro winery ordinance in Napa County. The goal was to create a space in Napa County for existing small businesses to come into compliance. There's a lot of people like us out there, second generation small family farms that want to grow, need access, direct to consumer access to grow, and are unable to make it through the existing compliance process outlined in Napa County. So we are trying very hard to get a streamlined process through for the micro wineries of Napa County. 95% of the work is done. The last 5% is politics, and the last 5% is proving to be the biggest hurdle of them all. So
challenging.
We're working. We're working hard. I'm still very optimistic. I have no choice but to be optimistic.
Sure.
But I really didn't think 4 years ago when we started this that we would still be working on this 4 years later.
Well, nothing in this valley happens quickly when it comes to things that have to be approved.
That's true. That's true. And I've been told that this is business at the speed of politics.
Yeah.
So I am learning.
Yeah, we human beings seem to think we live for 200 or 300 years waiting for this. You're kind of like,
right.
No, I don't want to die before this
right.
gets approved. You know, yeah, it's kind of a crazy thing. But meanwhile, I'm glad at least you're doing this. You're moving it forward because many of our listeners love the small wineries. You're talking about 1,000 cases, 5,000 cases, 200 cases, whatever. There's some real something behind wine made that way. It's something we all love and we all love to discover.
Right. And our dream as farmers is to have the tourists out here and take them on a vineyard walk and show them grape growing from the perspective of people that are growing grapes 8 months out of the year, have them touch vines, have them taste berries, just a real boots on the ground experience. A lot of people in Napa agree that that would elevate the Napa Valley brand. So we just need to get through the red tape.
Yeah. One of my favorite questions to ask winemakers, and I'm going to put this to your dad, to Ken, because I'm sure you've done your share of media over the years, interviews. What's the one question that you've never been asked that you would like to be asked?
Well, if I've never been asked it, I don't know what it is. No, I don't have an answer for that question. If you want to talk about whatever you want to talk about, count me in. But if you're asking me what question I would like to be asked that I could respond to, I don't have an answer to that question. I'll respond to anything, you know, or nothing. But I don't have an answer for your question.
That's okay.
And that's unusual for me not to have an answer for a question, but I don't have an answer for that question.
I have stumped the band. I feel pretty good
okay.
about myself now. Wow.
It's a perplexing question.
No, it is.
Yeah.
It's a very perplexing question. And even if I gave more thought to it, I really don't think that I would have an answer for it. I really don't.
We haven't talked about the wines, which is crazy that we've gotten this far. Obviously, you make Pinot Noir. I'm sipping some Pinot, which is absolutely wonderful. And I'm seeing, I think, a 2017.
17 Pinot Reserve.
Very nice.
Yes.
Yeah. Very nice. What else are you strictly Pinot Noir? Or are you doing Chardonnay? What else are you doing here?
We predominantly do Pinot Noir. When we have a good crop year, we do clonal specific Pinot Noirs. 2020 was the first year that we did a Pommard clone Pinot Noir. We grow 5 different types of Pinot Noir up here, 5 different clones, 3 domestic, 2 French. And then on an adjacent parcel, we just started growing Cabernet Sauvignon mm-hmm. and Cabernet Franc.
Nice.
So 2021 was our first harvest of our Cabernet Sauvignon.
Yay.
2022 will be our first harvest of the Cabernet Franc. We make a rosé. We make some Chardonnay from a friend's plot in Carneros. We used to grow Chardonnay here, but we replanted to 100% Pinot Noir about 20 years ago.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then we have the sparkling wine program, which I introduced. And the sparkling wine is made of predominantly Pinot Noir. However, we also did a Cabernet Sauvignon Pet Nat this
oh,
year.
Nice.
Yeah. So.
And what do we call that?
Cabernet.
Cabernet.
Trademark.
Nice. That's cool.
Yeah. And that's just resting in bottle. I will be disgorging that. So I'm a little flying by the seat of my pants with this Cabernet because not a lot of people make sparkling Cabernet Sauvignon. And I was just like, why not? And now I'm kind of learning like, oh, it's... It's got a little bit of bitterness to it, and I understand.
Well, two things are. Number one, that's okay, because winemakers are mad scientists. Would
right.
we all agree with this?
Yes.
That's part of the fact. But for two, why not? One of the things I've asked winemakers in the guise of being mad scientists, what have you done that has been either a great experiment or one that you'd rather not talk about that's fun to laugh about.
Right.
But in the end, if it's something different, that's very cool. And you've done four vintages, is that correct?
Yes.
So what led you to that? Was it just kind of like, I like it, let's try it?
Yes, I liked it. And a girlfriend of mine who's also a grower, we go to these natural sparkling wine tastings together, and Pet Nat was just popping on the scene 5 years ago locally, like in Oakland. So we decided, like, let's just try this one year. It was 2018. It was a bumper crop year. There was excess fruit everywhere. So it really wasn't hard to find, you know, a half ton of grapes to make a few gallons. And we made it in my garage. And Dad tried it, and he said it wasn't bad. That's a major compliment mm-hmm. from my dad. Mm-hmm. So the next year, a friend of mine asked me and my girlfriend to make a commercial vintage for her label.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, so
what a compliment.
Yeah, I know, right? It was 2 tons, very, very small. We made it out of Chardonnay, and our payment was bonded case goods, 25 cases bonded that we could sell under our label. So that was the introduction to sparkling wine for our brand. And everybody liked it. It sold out very quickly. And so after those two vintages, those two successes, my dad finally let me play with our grapes. But I had to prove myself.
You've officially entered the mad scientist
club. Right, yeah. Right. My third vintage making sparkling wine was our first Pinot Noir sparkling wine. I made 50 cases, sold out.
Oh, nice.
Through our wine club.
Nice.
Everybody wanted it. So this year I'm making another 50 cases of Pinot Noir sparkling wine, and I have about 35 cases of this Cabernet, which I'm going to dosage it, and it's going to be great, but it's a lot different than Pinot Noir, I'll tell you that.
Oh, my God, I can't even imagine. Because of this talk of Pet Nats and people getting to understand a little better, do you see that maybe popping up on shelves? Let me rephrase that. In a large quantity.
Right. You're not going to see it in the mainstream stores, but I do think that small wine shops are picking it up.
Yeah.
In fact, I had a couple small wine shops want to carry it because there isn't very much of it out there. And there isn't very, very much good Pet Nat out there. It's a great wine to make because it's quick, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You release it pretty much 1 year after you harvest it. And what's beautiful about it is you can disgorge it, you can dosage it, you can clean it up, you can alter the flavor profile a lot. You have a lot more of that mad scientist ability with this particular style of wine. And it's not in those confines of sparkling wine or champagne where it is expected to be very refined and very proper and high acidity and a specific color. Pet Nat's more the Wild West right now of winemaking. So it's a fun project to experiment with because it's not too high of expectations around it. You don't have to be scared that you're going to mess it up because a lot of Pet Nats are accepted in whatever form they're released in.
It's the hipster wine.
I was just going to say that. It's a cool hip thing.
Yeah, it is. It is. We had some people over here from London, and they lived in downtown London or wherever all the hip cats run and all that stuff, and they were just flipping on Pet
I'm
Nat.
Not surprised.
Yeah. They said, oh, man, this is... And the other thing, too, that I found extremely interesting, crown caps. Crown caps... That's it, man.
Wow.
You got a crown cap on your bottle. You've hit the big time. Whatever.
Mean, it's casual. It's easy.
Yeah.
You feel like you're popping a beer. Again, it doesn't have the formality of champagne, right? It's sparkling wine without the formality.
It's fun.
Yeah.
And they have, and Elisa's labels, I got to say, are pretty cool. She got the concept from my pinball machines, the back glass pinball art, and they're very, very hip, cool labels, and they just give the flash and the excitement and the really energy that people are looking for in a hip style of bottle of wine.
Again, it doesn't follow the formality of our Pinot Noir is very traditional.
Sure.
But Pet Nats are very untraditional.
Mm-hmm.
So when it came time to labeling this particular wine, I just didn't see it with our formal brand label.
Sure.
It had to have something fun, and I had to pay homage to the ranch and how I grew up, and Pennant's a little bit like pinball, right? All the magic happens behind the glass. You're just...
bouncing all over the place.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the thing, too, is that more men are becoming accepting of sparkling wine. And I think maybe, to a great degree, Pennant is a stepping stone for them, where you can go that, yeah, that cool top and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
So sure. I'll go to the real thing, you know, afterwards. Yeah. Well, maybe they're both real.
Right. Yeah. I buy it, as long as you're drinking it.
That's right. You know, one of the questions I ask everybody, and I'm not sure I want to ask this question to you because of what we've already talked about, but I'll start with Ken and ask it anyway. And that is, good or bad, what makes you crazy about the wine business?
Huh. Well, I've always enjoyed wine. I didn't have an appreciation for wine until I got involved in the business and started really understanding what good wine was. But it's just something that I've enjoyed over the years. I like trying new wines. I'll try any wine. Sure, let's check it out, see what it is. But I just enjoy the wine, and I enjoy the business, and I enjoy the people in the business. But I think probably the thing that really gets my juices flowing is the opportunity to, create a product from the dirt, from the land, grow it, make it, bottle it, age it, and enjoy it is probably the full circle. And, you know, not being egotistical, but being able to have a really integral part in that whole process is very self-satisfying.
How can it not be? I mean, it's the earth.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. Yeah. Yeah, I enjoy it. I love drinking, too, so what the hell?
Elise?
What makes me crazy about the wine industry, how many touch points a bottle of wine has before it lands in the consumer's hands. I think a lot of people don't understand. Like my dad said, it starts in February, and it takes at least 18 months, right? 24 months, maybe?
Yeah, at least.
Of constant care and attention. You grow the fruit for 8 months, you harvest it, you make the wine, you tend to the wine, you care for the wine, you buy all the supplies to bottle it, to label it, to cork it, to foil it, to package it, to store it, to market it, then to ship it.
Yeah.
it's never ending. It's not a short process.
No.
From grape to table at all. And there's a million things that can go wrong at every stage in the game. You have Mother Nature to contend with. People don't really think about how hard it is to move 2,500 gallons of a liquid. I mean, you have, your clamp's not tight enough on your tank. That's a disaster. There's just so many variables to it. You really are kind of holding your breath until the package is done.
Well, and to your point, too, you go back to 2018 where everybody had extra juice and it's like, we got to put it somewhere. Not everybody understands that it has to go somewhere. You don't have magic holes in the ground or tanks that you can just fill. Tanks are very,
right,
very
right.
Physical or tactile,
right,
or whatever.
And you can always tell the, there's certain winemakers, I think most winemakers, nobody wants to waste a gallon, you know? You don't pour wine down the drain.
Cheers to them.
Pour down your throat.
Okay, well, that's a little extreme, but yeah, you don't throw fruit away. You don't throw in progress wine away. You just don't throw things away.
It's almost like an insult to Mother Nature when you get right down to it, too, if you want to get real serious about it. For our listeners who would like to learn about Elkhorn Peak Cellars right here in Napa Valley, what is your website and how would they get a hold of you?
Our website is elkhornpeak.com. We're also on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. This guy has a lot of great content on YouTube. And, if you want to get in touch with us, shoot us an email, info@elkhornpeak.com. It's going to be either me or my dad responding. And if you want to try the wine, we got plenty of it. So go online, order a bottle.
I think, Ray, that stands this out from a lot of the other guys is we're small producers, we're hands-on, family business. Elise, myself, my wife, we're the total show here. We do everything. If you call up, Elise or me, answer the phone, talk to you. It's we haven't got away from the personal interaction that a lot of businesses have got away from. And I think in our society today, a lot of people are still looking for that personal interaction. They want to call up and talk to somebody. They don't want to get a thing to you know, dial this number to talk to this thing, all that kind of stuff. And I know when I call a business, when somebody answers the phone, I'm connected. I feel good. And that's the feeling that we want to relay in our business, because we have a product that we're making. We feel good about the product, and we want to interject that whole feeling to our customers that, you know, hey, yeah, we're real. Come check out our wine. Talk to us. You know, that's the kind of deal we like. Kind of old school.
Sure. Very old school.
Yeah. But old school is good, at least from my perspective, because I'm an old guy.
Well, it's pretty cool to think you can talk to the owner and to the daughter. So thank you both. It was great to reconnect after all this time. Thank you for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Ray, thank you so much for coming
out. Thanks, Ray. Appreciate you coming out, spending your time and talking to us.
Yeah.
Cool.
Let's have a glass of wine.
Yeah.
Yes.
Learn more by visiting elkhornpeak.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Additional original music by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Copyright 2021.